100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're awaiting an update from the Kodiak Emergency Services Director coming up right at 12 o'clock. And then we'll have our regular news program right after that. We're awaiting the Emergency Services Director.
Ready? Good afternoon. Thank you for listening in again today, February 25th, 2021. My name is Mike Twenge. Today is day 346. 346 days since the Emergency Operations Center first gathered to understand the coronavirus and how we could protect ourselves or isolate ourselves from this virus. Kodiak has done very well in comparison to other areas of the world. It is because of your actions in maintaining those safeguards of wearing a mask, social distancing, and washing your hands that has brought us to where we are today. Let's not forget this as we watch the daily COVID-19 case count drop. There are many reasons for the reduction in COVID cases. We have had over 1,000 residents infected and are now temporarily resistant to reinfection. We've reduced our social circles. We have been consistently wearing masks in public. Businesses and workplaces have developed strong mitigation plans, and the vaccine is now available. Kodiak has taken this virus seriously. The state vaccination dashboard shows 3,244 Kodiak Island Borough residents have had their first dose, and 1,918 having their second dose. Vaccines continue to be available at Kodiak Area Native Association, Kodiak Community Health Center, Safeway, and also Walmart. Follow their individual registration instructions to receive your vaccine. The tier group open now is people 65 years and above, people 50 years and above with high-risk medical conditions, people 50 years who are an essential worker and must work within 6 feet of others, pre-K through 12 grade and child care education staff, most healthcare workers, and people living or working in congregate settings. The next eligible group, which is phase 1B, tier 3, has not yet been announced yet. Even though the state declared public health disaster declaration has expired, Kodiak is still scheduled to receive vaccine allotments. In fact, the March allotment has already been determined, so this is good news. The Emergency Services Council met this morning and acknowledged the community health status as favorable. The Emergency Operations Center is aware of zero new cases again today, with the most recent case tested on Saturday the 20th. We now have two active cases in Kodiak. With this news, the Emergency Services Council is removing the in-person capacity restrictions. Businesses and activities at their choosing may now open to 100% capacity. However, some businesses may not be comfortable with this option at this time, so please respect their right to choose. Of course, we do appreciate businesses that are requiring customers and staff to wear a mask. The Emergency Services Council highly recommends wearing a mask. There have been two recent surges of the virus within the state. You may have also heard the highly contagious Brazilian mutation has now been discovered in Alaska. Let's keep that away from Kodiak. The harbor has no vessels under quarantine. Schools remain open. We have no hospitalizations, no new cases to report. Businesses are open, the Chamber of Commerce is preparing for Crab Festival, and the seafood industry remains operational. So together we have, as one united community, achieved a long-range goal. It is time to be thankful, yet a time to remain cautious. We need to stay in this situation as long as possible. Talk to those that have received the vaccine to see if it is right for you. If so, Register for the vaccine and protect yourself and others around you from becoming seriously ill. We can keep the virus from spreading. We can stop it from mutating. Many of us are tired of the virus and all it has damaged. So let's continue to be safe. Let's keep our social bubbles intact. Wear a mask while in public. Remember to wash with soap and test if you have been traveling, around a close contact, or feel ill. Remember, prevention is the best way to control the virus. I'll be back with another community update in 2 weeks, and hopefully we'll have more good news to report. So thank you, Kodiak, and be safe.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Alaska Energy Authority plans to install between 10 to 14 electric chargers along the rail belt from Homer to Seward and Fairbanks. The corporation is looking for companies to make those charging stations and sites to host them. It has about $1 million to put toward the project as part of Alaska's share of a 2017 settlement with Volkswagen over a diesel emissions scandal. Other states have pledged to use their shares of the settlement money to create corridors too. The idea is people might be more willing to buy and use electric cars if they know they'll be able to charge them on long roads like the Seward and Parks highways. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has this report.
It's one thing if you're driving around town, says Alaska Energy Authority Executive Director Curtis Thayer.
But if you're driving from Homer and you want to go to Anchorage, you're going to want to know where those charging stations are, especially the one in Anchorage, to recharge in order to get you back home.
The Alaska Energy Authority plans to install Level 3 chargers. They're more expensive than other charger types, but they can charge some cars in under an hour, whereas others might need an entire night. Thayer says they plan to place stations within 5 miles of the highway every 50 to 100 miles. The federally suggested range is every 50 miles.
But obviously, getting from the Girdwood gas station to, you know, whether Moose Pass or Cooper Landing, you've exceeded the 50 miles.
Henry Krull of Kenai drives an older model Tesla that has a range of 250 miles.
We're basically limited right now to whatever our vehicle's range is, which means if your vehicle has a range of 200 miles, you can basically travel 100 miles in one direction and 100 miles in the other direction. And throughout Alaska, it's often difficult to find publicly accessible charging, you know, even within several hundred miles.
Thayer says recent estimates place Alaska at 1,000 electric vehicle users. The number of electric vehicles on the road has grown significantly in the last few years, thanks in part to incentives like reduced registration fees.
And I truly believe that once you get in the pickup market with electric vehicles, which is just right now beginning, you're going to see a large increase in the state.
They're particularly popular down in Southeast, where range is less of a concern. Some electric vehicles can go as far as 300 miles without a charge. Krull says newer Tesla models can go up to 350 miles at a time.
But in Alaska, you're still very limited. You know, if you want to travel from Anchorage to Fairbanks, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to do that.
Cold weather can also reduce battery life. That may not be a problem on the Kenai Peninsula, but could be up in Fairbanks. Another hurdle, Thayer says, is power.
Because that's going to affect the cost, depending on the demand charges and in the location.
A business may spend a couple hundred dollars a month maintaining a station. The Alaska Energy Authority hopes to cover up to 80% of the cost for stations. Bruce Shelley, Director of Member Relations for Homer Electric Association, says the co-op is working with the Energy Authority to see how hosts can incorporate charging stations without increasing demand charges for members. Shelley says there are 8 public charger stations in the association's service area. None of those are Level 3 chargers. Bids for charger manufacturers are due March 8th. The request for bids is available through the Alaska Energy Authority site. Thayer says they haven't decided whether they will work with one or multiple manufacturers. He says they're not aware of any charger manufacturers in Alaska. The bid for potential charger sites will go out later, on March 12th. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Yesterday, the third day of the Scandese Rose hearing shed some light on stability issues in the crab pot fishing fleet as a whole, and investigators heard a firsthand account of the sinking from a survivor. First, Paul Zankich, Bud Bronson, Jonathan Parrott, 3 expert naval architects, provided testimony in the morning. They conduct stability reports on many vessels like the Scandies Rose. Their testimony was followed by Cecily Lowenstein, who reviews stability reports for the Coast Guard. Lowenstein criticized stability reports by Bruce Culver, who conducted the most recent stability survey for the Scandies Rose, as inconsistent and inaccurate. A major point the engineers emphasized during their testimony is that stability reports for icing, that's when ice forms on the vessel and its contents, may not be up to par. The naval architects say there has never been an icing study on a stacked mass of pots on the deck of a fishing vessel. They say this could mean that the tremendous weight of ice forming on the deck of the Scandies Rose and other boats may not be fully accounted for in the stability reports. Zankich went on to say that, quote, I, as a naval architect, do not believe in the regulations, quote, unquote, referring to the regulations that determine what is considered safe levels of ice. He also alluded to his belief that the Scandies Rose rolled over due to ice buildup. Lowenstein underscored the need for more regulations and their enforcement, noting that the marine industry is, quote, the wild, wild west, unquote. Much of the afternoon testimony was given by John Lawler, a crew member of the Scandies Rose and one of two survivors. Lawler expressed his concerns about preparations on the Scandies to sail, namely how rushed it was, and the disregard for the severe weather forecast. While on watch, Lawler said he felt the hull had already taken on water and watched the ice build on the boat and the pots. When asked if he were the Scandies captain what he would have done, Lawler responded, it would have been too hazardous to send the crew out in that. It wouldn't have been worth it. The Scandies Rose sank on New Year's Eve in 2019 around 10 p.m. after leaving port in Kodiak. Five of the seven crew were lost. The vessel sank just south of Sutwick Island. The Marine Board investigation's hearing on the fatal sinking continued today, opening with testimony from Andrew Lawrence, a naval architect and expert on ship stability. He was asked to produce a stability report on the boat after the tragedy and found that it was starkly different from the ones produced for the Scandies Rose in 1988 and 2019. According to his model, the master instructions detailing safe stability conditions for the boat underestimated the surface area for the crab pots by 25%. They also did not define the bulwarks of the vessel, did not include down flooding points, which are points that the water can infiltrate through, such as engine exhaust vents, and even had incorrect placement of crab holding tanks on the vessel. Lawrence said adding down flooding points to the older model immediately rendered some of the loading conditions unsafe. The model Lawrence provided also found that the considered max load of 208 crab pots on the vessel would have failed regulatory stability. Building on the testimony from naval architects presented yesterday, Lawrence stated that the calculations for icing conditions assumed a symmetrical buildup of ice, which is not realistic. Icing typically occurs in the direction wind is blowing, leading to a buildup of weight on one side of the boat. This naturally increases the risk of rolling over. Lawrence's testimony was followed by testimony from Corey Fanning, an engineer on a fishing boat who used to work on the Scandies Rose. He described the boat as a, quote, warship, unquote, and a Cadillac, quote, unquote, in an earlier interview with the Coast Guard and reaffirmed those feelings Thursday morning, meaning that he thought it was an excellent fishing vessel. He spoke highly of the crew and the captain of the Scandies Rose. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy tested positive for COVID-19 early yesterday and is suffering from what his office is calling mild symptoms. On Saturday, Dunleavy was exposed to a person who later tested positive for the virus. He received a rapid test on Sunday, which came back negative, and he has been quarantining at home since then. Dunleavy's office said he was not feeling well Tuesday night, then tested again Wednesday morning and was positive. The governor's office has not provided any details about Dunleavy's close contact who tested positive for the virus. Dunleavy is 59 years old. He's being monitored by his attending physician and chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, his office said. They will provide the public with updates as needed. In a state that's doing well with vaccinations, the community of Sitka is doing very well. More than half of the eligible population has been vaccinated against COVID-19, and that now includes teenagers 16 and over, making Sitka one of the first places in the nation where this has been possible. As KCAW's Catherine Rose reports, Sitka's success is based on the smart management of a dual vaccine supply and a lot of hard work.
The vaccine clinic set up at Sitka's Centennial Building looks different from many in the lower 48. No line, no crowds.
And did you bring your shot record from the last time? Looks like you did.
Patients pop in every few minutes for their appointments, and they don't have to wait very long before a nurse directs them to roll up their sleeve.
So after I give you your injection, you'll move to the next room and wait your 15 minutes.
Another big difference? Some of the faces are younger. Much younger. 17-year-old Bradley Westlock is a senior at Mount Edgecombe High School. He and a group of his classmates just got their second doses of the Pfizer vaccine.
Yeah, I feel lucky and thankful that I got the shot. Hoping that everything will go back to normal once everyone gets vaccinated.
Normal for Westlock is attending school in Sitka and being able to travel home over breaks. He's from the Yupik village of Emonik on the mouth of the Yukon River in western Alaska. He's hoping now that he's vaccinated, traveling home to see his grandparents will be safer.
That's why I got it, just to protect them.
Westlock and his peers are some of the first teens in the country to receive the vaccine. And it's no accident. It took a lot of work to get here.
Young people are people that move through the community quickly. They have lots of social activities and lots of social contact.
Dr. Elliot Brule is the chief medical officer at the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH. The tribal health provider serves Sitka and many other rural communities in this part of the state. To date, its hospital has administered 3,700 first doses of the vaccine in Sitka, a town of around 8,500 people. Add in the efforts of a second vaccine clinic run by Sitka's local pharmacies, and over 50% of eligible Sitkans have received at least one dose.
As these vaccines came, we saw it as a moral and ethical imperative that we did not leave vaccines sitting in the freezer.
Brule says there are several reasons the hospital's vaccine rollout has been so successful. The first is a robust vaccine allocation. They get two supplies, one from the state and one from the Indian Health Service. And IHS has been extremely efficient across the whole country in getting vaccines out. SEARCH also built an online vaccine registration system from scratch that uses QR codes to streamline the process. Brule says they've put enormous resources toward vaccinating whole communities, Alaska Native people and non-Native residents alike.
Elbow grease. You know, attitude makes the difference in life and in work. And in this instance, we said this is our number one priority, and we put the muscle behind that.
Since the first vaccine doses arrived in Alaska in December, SEARCH has held around three clinics a week in Sitka and can give around 250 vaccinations in one clinic. SEARCH brought the vaccine to all of the remote communities they serve, by float plane if the weather was good enough to fly, and by boat if it wasn't. Vaccination rates in those communities now range anywhere from 35% to 85%. And a couple of weeks ago, when the clinics were no longer saturated with people in the higher risk groups, SEARCH opened vaccine registration up to anyone 16 and older. Teens like Silas Dimmert. Dimmert jumped at the opportunity. He's a cross-country runner, and during the summer, he works at a local grocery store. He's looking forward to getting his vaccine.
I want it, and it's like nice to have that sense of immunity, but I'm also 16. I'm kind of healthier, so it was nice to hear that they're getting it to people that need it more.
Honestly, it's thrilling.
That's Silas's mom, Emily Dimmert. She's an English teacher at Sitka High School. She got vaccinated earlier this month, but it was when her students started flourishing their vaccine cards that she really breathed a sigh of relief.
Honestly, when a couple of my students shared that they were getting the vaccine the other day, I just got this spark of joy that was like, yes. Now we're really going to see some changes, I think.
She says teens in her class get the pandemic and they get masking and sanitizing. But social distancing, that's a tough one to grok when you're 16.
They say things like, I would just want to go back to normal.
Dimmert says she hopes the vaccine will bring her teens at home and in her classroom some of that normal they've been aching for. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Mentors are wanted to broaden skills in Alaska's young fishermen. More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers, simplify your sales online from one location at the Seafood Auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
The call is out for fishing groups or businesses to partner with young Alaska fishermen to help them hone skills in management, advocacy, research, marketing, conservation, business, and more. It's the fifth year for the Young Fishermen's Fellowship Program, an arm of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. Jamie O'Connor is working waterfront director.
The program is really energized to help young fishermen bridge the gap between the water and the waterfront and help to diversify their experience within the fishing industry. The fellowship have included everything from direct marketing to the history of fisheries to policy. So it's a really great way for young fishermen to utilize other skills that they may have onshore.
The program has so far placed 15 fishermen under 40 in a wide range of mentorships, many of which have led to diverse careers.
So our fishing fellows have gone on to careers as fisheries staffers in Congress, as AP members to the council. We had one of our fishing fellows use her time with Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association to segue into work as a fleet manager in Sitka.
O'Connor, a Bristol Bay fisherman, segued her fellowship with the North Pacific Fisheries Association in Homer into her current job at AMCC.
One of the main benefits that I have seen to both fellows and the organizations who host them are building those relationships within the broader fisheries community and the industries that support our fisheries communities.
Interested mentors can apply through March 31st. Then the call will go out for fishing fellows. O'Connor says they'll be matched up and work out flexible schedules lasting 2 to 5 months.
So if you have a project that you think could be energized by the efforts of a young fisherman, reach out to me and I can help you put that project proposal together.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 25th day of February, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:13, and it will set again at 6:34 p.m., giving us 10 hours and 20 minutes of glorious daylight. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this day was 1 degree, set in 1986, and our record high was 48, set in 2011. Currently 42 degrees. We blazed right through the predicted high of 41, and we're looking for mostly sunny skies this afternoon. West wind to 30 miles per hour, though, should decrease to 20 or so, but could gust as high as 40. For tonight, slight chance of rain and snow before midnight, then a chance of rain between midnight and 3. Cloudy skies tonight with a low of about 36. South wind at 10 miles per hour. Your chance of that precipitation about 30%. For tomorrow, 30% chance of rain after 3 p.m., then mostly sunny skies with a high near 42 again. South wind at 15 miles per hour. Friday night, rain likely, mainly between midnight and 3 a.m. Cloudy skies overnight on Friday and a low of about 37. So sunny in the day, cloudy in the night. Looking at our local district tides, we have a high tide coming up any minute now on the east side at 12:26 p.m. of 9.29 feet, followed by a low tide this evening at 7:14 p.m. of minus 0.9 feet. Our next high tide will be at 1:42 a.m. of 7.47 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning here on the east side of 7:03 a.m. of 2 feet. Over on the west side, these are Euganic Pass tides. You have a high tide coming up at 1:03 p.m. That will be a 15-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:42 p.m. of minus 1.49 feet. Your next high tide will be at 2:02 a.m. of 14.64 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 7:51 a.m. and be 1.86 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet, a 996 millibar low 40 nautical miles northwest of Yakutat will exit the Gulf East Thursday afternoon. A broad westerly flow will remain over the Gulf through Friday morning. A front will arrive over the western Gulf Friday afternoon. As a result of all that, Marmot Island is sitting at gale warning today, west wind 35 knots, seas to 14 feet. For tonight, southwest wind 25 knots and seas to 12 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest wind 30 knots, seas to 12 feet. Over on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today, southwest wind to 40 knots right now in the Shelikof and seas to 14 feet. For tonight, southwest 30, diminishing to 20 knots after midnight, seas to 10 feet tonight, subsiding to 5 feet after midnight. For Friday and Friday night, southwest 25, seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory today. West wind to 30 knots, diminishing to 15 knots late this afternoon. Gusting to 40 knots, though. Seas to 5 feet. For tonight, southwest 10, seas to 2 feet. For Friday and Friday night, southwest winds to 20 knots and seas to 3 feet in Chiniak Bay. For Marmot Bay, gale warning today with west wind to 35 knots up in Marmot Bay right now, gusting to 45 knots, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, southwest wind to 20 knots, diminishing to 10 knots after midnight, seas to 4 feet, subsiding to 2 feet after midnight tonight. For Friday in Marmot Bay, south wind to 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. The 24th Annual Fisher Poet Gathering will be going virtual this year with your chance to see and listen to more Fisher Poets than ever before. This gathering is held in Astoria, Oregon, over last weekend in February, but with the pandemic, it will be live streamed on YouTube Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, beginning tonight, the 25th. Many of the performers are from Southeast and will run from 7 to 10 p.m. each evening. To get more information and to check out the YouTube link, visit the website FisherPoets, that's all one word, .org. The Assembly is having a work session tonight. That will happen at 6:30 p.m. and be via teleconference, and you need to go to the Kodiak Borough website to find a link to participate with that. Kodiak City Council will also be holding a regular council meeting tonight. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held virtually. And you need to go to the city website for the meeting packet and a link so that you can watch and listen. Public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT right here on 100.1 FM as well. If you'd like printed meeting materials or have questions, call the clerk at 486-8636. Kodiak Public Library, you can help Kodiak read a million minutes by March 31st. The library urges readers to log their minutes spent reading to achieve this goal by March 31st. And you can't just read Green Eggs and Ham over and over. Sign up at Beanstack Reading Challenge posted on the library's webpage and Facebook page. And you can call the library at 486-8686 if you need help logging in. Be sure to check out Storytime at the library, posted at the library's YouTube channel. Stories for children of all ages are read by Ms. Ani every week. The library offers home delivery to those unable to get out of the house and curbside pickup to the side door. Call the library for this service, available Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. There's a drive-through community baby shower tomorrow, noon till 4:30 at the Canna Cognac building on Near Island. If you had a baby in 2020, please swing by and grab a baby shower bag. We're celebrating all the babies born in 2020. Again, that's tomorrow, noon till 4:30 at the Canna Cognac building on Near Island.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.